Hi, I'm Ryan Penny, and welcome to The Catholic Sphere. This week, we are bringing back a panel of dynamic Catholics to continue our discussion on making America chaste again. In part one of this conversation, we focused on the general unchastity of American culture today, from the declined marriage rates and soberingly high cohabitation rates, and began to consider how to make America chaste again. But today we're focusing in particular on taking on what some might even call the sacraments of our depraved culture: pornography, birth control, and abortion, and how reclaiming the truth of the human person is the only path to redemption. First, we have with us again the president and co-founder of the Humanum Project, Brendan McCauley. He's joining us from Tennessee. Up next is the co-director of programs for the Theology of the Body Institute, Elizabeth Busby. She is with us from Pennsylvania. And finally, we have Catholic entrepreneur Mike Pantile. Mike joins us today from Alberta, Canada. Brendan, let's start with you. According to addictionhelp.com, approximately 69% of American men and 40% of American women view online pornography every year. And Pornhub alone reported more than 2 billion visits in a single month in 2023. So Brendan, it seems like we're standing at the bottom of Mount Everest looking up. Like, how do we even begin to scale this mountain and make America chaste again?
I think we should ban Pornhub, ban all of that at the federal level. Like, that's my opinion. It does not teach us to love rightly at all. So that would be my first thing. But, you know, I speak, you know, to a lot of youth and young adults around the country, and there's a lot of people, you know, Catholic young adults, a lot of them are living in just shame and guilt because of their addictions to lust. And, you know, the first thing that I tell them that they need to know is, you know, no matter what you've done, your value has not changed. You know, your sin doesn't define you, Pope John Paul II says, but the Father's love for you. And so we got to first separate ourselves from our sin, because in the midst of our brokenness and darkness and shame and sexual sin, you know, the Father still sees his beloved son and beloved daughter. And so, you know, that's the first thing. But I'll be honest with you, Ryan, you know, in our culture, we do see a lot of the mess and, like, wow, pornography is becoming more twisted. Like, yeah, the marriage rate, cohabitation is skyrocketing. We see all these things, but I'm also seeing a whole lot of hope, a lot of amazing men and women actually standing up to fight it. And even if they're battling in their addictions, they're still fighting it. And that right there is heroic. You know, the saint isn't the one who has all of their sin gone. You know, we have many saints who died in addiction. You know, they didn't get their act cleaned up, so to speak. So I'm seeing a lot of that. I'm seeing a lot of hope. And Christ even says to the woman who was, you know, involved in prostitution and who wept at his feet, you know, he says, because she has been forgiven much, she loves much. And I think, yeah, we're deep in addiction as a culture, but I think this is an amazing time for us to rise up, and I think we're going to have a lot of heroic saints.
There is so much hope. And Elizabeth, some would say that pornography that we're talking about here is really just a man's problem. But according to these sobering numbers, that is clearly not the case. Why are more and more women becoming users and addicts even of porn? And what's the solution?
I think one of the devastating realities about all of this is that pornography has become so accessible. It's so accessible. And so it used to be the case where you would have to, like, go somewhere and hide somewhere and, like, or go into a store or whatever and look at something there. Now you can literally look at it on your phone from anywhere. And the way that this pornography is created, these videos are created, is to become what's called a hyperstimulus. So it's meant to make you want more and more and more and more to get the same hit. So it is also, it's understandable in some ways that when you get sucked in to this really dire, dark part of the internet, that it would prey on our natural human desires for authentic love, for authentic intimacy, and honestly, just the necessary arousals in the human body. So I think some of it is because it's just so accessible and it's just everywhere. I think another reason is we have this, in some ways, really big misunderstanding of the differences between masculinity and femininity, right? What John Paul II says, which of course is what the church teaches, is that men and women are different, but they are equal in dignity. And so there is this sense in which we both are responsible for loving, and we're both responsible for authentically giving of ourselves. And it's just in a different way. It's not the same, but it is equal in dignity. And so we have a misunderstanding of that in the culture. And I think in some ways we have a misunderstanding of that in the church, in kind of degrading the value of women and the value of femininity to be something that is more subservient, more obedient. It just it twists the pursuit of authentic holiness. And so shifting our goal toward both men and women striving for holiness, striving for living the dignity of our bodies the way that God has asked us to, and really living out an authentic understanding of chastity, not as a rule based like no, but as an authentic, how can I uphold the dignity of the person in front of me? And how can I allow my sexuality to be something that's integrated and oriented toward the dignity of the other? So a lot of it, I think, also comes down to this education and understanding how to rightly order these desires that God has given us that are good, that are meant to lead us to Him, not to stop at kind of like the sexual arousal or that union here on earth, but really to like throw us into the heart of the Father and to experience that a little bitty foretaste of the dignity that awaits all of us in our destiny.
Exactly. Rightly order is how the church teaches that chastity is the successful integration of sexuality within the person, not the annihilation of it. And so, and then recognizing that it's meant to be ordered to making a gift of ourselves out of love. But man, oh man, that is hard to help some people to realize. As Mike, I know you know, as a mentor and coach to many men, how do you tackle specifically this problem of pornography?
A great question, and I echoed a lot of these sentiments on the frat episode, but one thing I didn't touch on was this first piece before we touch anything else, which of course starts with the spiritual life. A man has to come to the realization that he's ready to make the decision to give up the sin. So many of us, and in my journey in giving up lust or addictions, alcohol, etc., I wasn't ready. I was maybe 60% there. Like cognitively, I sort of rationalized myself into thinking and understanding that, yeah, I need to give this up. This is not good for my soul. This is not good for, you know, my mental health, my physical health, etc. A lot of men aren't ready to give up their sin. They want a little bit of that sin to themselves. So first, you have to come to that decision in rightful obedience to God that you're ready to give it up. And of course, now that we're trying to tackle it, it all starts in the spiritual life. And what I see across the majority of these men that struggle with this is a lack of a sacramental life. So I always start this off with a 33-day consecration to St. Joseph. St. Joseph doesn't get as much love as he should. Everybody obviously talks about Jesus Christ because he's the guy. He's God, Son of God, God, a triune, and the ultimate patriarch, and then the only person second to him in terms of that patriarchal structure or the patriarchal image is Saint Joseph, and the ultimate example in chastity and obedience to God through the love of Jesus Christ and of course the Blessed Mother. And then starting that off with a 24 to 48 hour fast, we're getting real practical. Regular confession has to be part of this. Regular communion has to be part of this. And if honestly, most issues would be solved if more men, more women would orient themselves around, can I take communion on any given day? Because that means if you can, you're in a state of grace. That's the most important thing. Regular confession, consecration to Saint Joseph, keeping him in your devotions as that ultimate example of chastity, second to only Jesus Christ. The fast, and then also understanding where there are gaps in these men's schedules, and understanding that diet also plays a role in this as well, that it's all encompassing. We can get covenant eyes on our phone. We can get all of these sort of more passive means, and they're helpful. Technology is good. It's helpful. But accountability is needed. So having a brother in your life, fraternity is so lacking, especially this Catholic community. And it's why I started the Catholic Masculinity Project as well. It's a community of men online where we can grow in faith, fellowship, and fortitude. So having accountability with a brother in your life that'll hold you accountable, understanding where you slip up, And most typically, it's in these gaps in these schedules that men have, typically on the weekends. So find some structure. Find yourself in a hobby that you love and enjoy. Find yourself, again, a regular confession, regular partaking of the Eucharist, regular physical training, subduing the body. And I truly believe grace builds on nature, and physical strength certainly is a virtue if it's well ordered properly, a sub-virtue of fortitude. And then also understanding that, and now downstream from all those real, real practical things too, the final piece is obviously diet. Now I'm an ex-fitness entrepreneur. I owned a gym for many, many years. It's how I made my living, and how I transitioned out and doing the work that I'm doing right now. There's such a thing called the food palatability hyper-reward hypothesis. And so the more hyper-palatable, junk food we eat, the more that we want. Men have to understand, in much a similar way with the concupiscible appetite, the lustful appetite, the more that you consume, the more that you want. And so there's going to be this rebound effect. So if you can well order your nutrition as well, your brain won't be searching for the dopamine in the same way that it was before. A lot of men have this thing in common where they're ravaged by lust, they're addicted to pornography, but Their physical fitness isn't well ordered. Their nutrition isn't well ordered. They're not going to regular confession. There's no devotion to St. Joseph, or obviously living a sacramental life. And I think all of these together make a holistic and practical approach to defeating pornography. And many of the men have reaped the fruits of that by, going through this process with me. Obviously, praise be to God.
And I know you've seen it. Yes, and praise be to God. That's a powerful list there, Mike. Basically, of make a decision, you stay in a state of grace, make sure you have a brotherhood and have good habits, especially physical ones, because grace builds upon nature. So, and when men take hold of those habits, lives change. So, Brendan, now moving into this topic of birth control, according to researchers at the University of Chicago, vasectomy rates in the U.S. have witnessed a remarkable surge just from 2014 to 2021. They say that while the absolute numbers among the general population remain low, roughly 4% of men at least report having undergone sterilization in their lifetime, the 26% relative increase in vasectomy rates means urologists must be prepared for more frequent family planning conversations, as they say. So this is a serious issue. How have we gotten to a point in America where now more than ever, men are willing to incapacitate themselves to such a dramatic degree? And what does it say about the state of masculinity today?
Yeah, great question, Ryan. Boys are meant to be raised by good fathers so that they can become, the boys turn into men, good husbands and good fathers, right? And our sexuality speaks that. And so when we literally snap off, what makes us really men is this image of fatherhood. We're snapping away our masculinity, ultimately. And again, I think, in the last episode, we just talked about, we're being trained by our culture as men that, what it means to be a man is you got to get the most attractive woman, and she's like your puppet that you control, and you can, it's just so warped. I see this so often in movies and just media, it's everywhere. And so I think, again, it has to do with media and just how we've been trained as men. But I love what Mike shared just earlier about overcoming pornography. And for men, what we just talked about, this is a big struggle. And a lot of men don't want to admit to it because it's this shows that I have a struggle and that I'm weak. But it is a strength to bring it into the light. And what Mike said, you need to change your whole life. That's not just the problem. How's your health? How's your prayer life? How's your vision about the man that you want to become? Do you have people to help order you to that? It's much bigger and much broader. And the state of masculinity today, and I was called out by a counselor 4 years ago, we're boys. There's so many, people in their 20s and 30s and 40s that are still a boy living for themselves. And I'll never forget what my counselor 4 years ago, he just said, "Can I call you out for a second, Brendan? Because what we were diving into was when I was with a girl, I was happy. And when I wasn't with a girl, I was unhappy." And he says, "Brendan, it wouldn't be okay to enter marriage as an insecure boy looking for the woman to just fill all of your needs and woundedness." He's like, "No, you're called to be a secure man who knows his identity first as a beloved son of the Father who can freely give of himself." And I was called out, but I'm like, yes, I need to be called out. We got to call out boys to men. You know, like a lot of guys I talk to, they'll say on college campuses, you know, I want the girl to ask me out. I want the girl to ask me out. And I'm like, bro, like, step it up, do hard things. You're capable of doing hard things. And so, yeah, that's what I would say is what we got to do. Just, I mean, we could talk a lot about how we can call out the man in the boy, but for short, we just got to do that. We got to call people out.
Basically, what I'm hearing is men need other men to call them out. And I've heard many times from my own experience, boys don't just naturally turn into men. Like, they need to be called out. That masculinity needs to be brought out of them from other masculine men. That's what we need. So, Elizabeth, a similar question to you now, again, for the women. According to the CDC, the crude total percentage of women who have had a hysterectomy is 17.2%. And according to the National Women's Health Network, approximately 600,000 hysterectomies are performed annually in the U.S. Now, some people might say, well, that's better to prevent pregnancy altogether than to get an abortion. How would you respond to that?
I would respond that we are looking too shallowly at this huge issue. Where we need to be looking is deep down into our intimate relationships, because you find yourself pregnant. That's kind of like people are surprised, right? When you have sex and you get pregnant
something
and you're like, oh my gosh, something went totally wrong. I'm like, actually something went amazingly right. But we just have been totally tricked by this contraceptive culture into thinking that we can separate sexual intimacy from the procreative end of sexual intimacy. Now, of course, the church recognizes that it's both unitive and procreative. We can't separate the procreation from the unitive either, which is a totally separate conversation. But it is important to note that the church recognizes that these two are integrated because that's how God created our bodies. So once you enter in this understanding that it is possible to not get pregnant from sex, you know, of course, there are beautiful, like it was the Lord's idea that our bodies were not fertile all of the time. So there are ways that we can step into the natural rhythm that God has given our bodies, and they are perfectly in line with God's design because it was God's idea that we're not fertile all the time. But when we enter contraception into this conversation, we start thinking that it is possible to split them up of our own accord. And so when women end up pregnant, they think that there is something wrong here. So what, honestly, the issue that I think we need to address is this real authentic understanding of the dignity of our bodies and the way that we are called to love with our bodies. Because if we are living that intimacy rightly, then eventually that conversation of whether we pursue sterilization or whether we pursue abortion or whether, like, how all of this plays out, that conversation is going to become null and void. So ultimately, I think that is the conversation, the authentic, beautiful dance between masculinity and femininity, upholding the dignity of woman and woman's body, and like the way that she engages in intimacy and then could get pregnant is wrong. That's not how God has created us, right? We're different, but equal in dignity. And I also want to touch on a couple other things when it comes to this conversation. One of them is women, I think we need to approach all of these things with so much sensitivity to the brokenness that comes with thinking that you need to sterilize yourself in order to be truly free. There is so, if you look in the heart of the individual person, there is so much pain and agony that and longing and grasping and like trying to find happiness that goes into these conversations. And so I think an authentic chastity comes from an authentic understanding of Christian charity. And so recognizing that these people long for the Lord the way that all of us long for, and they've just been sold this lie. And when it comes to hysterectomies, I also just want to say a lot of hysterectomies come from women's health not being managed properly. And the church is really speaking so much beauty and light into this gynecological conversation, frankly, with Napro technology. Because when we are able, like when women are put on, teenagers are put on birth control from 14, then they're on birth control for 10, 15, 20 years to mask physical symptoms, to put a Band-Aid on physical symptoms, and then they find themselves wanting to enter into a relationship where they could get pregnant. And then we have all of these fertility issues and just all of these things that flow from it. I think we really have to go back to the root of how did God create our bodies and how can we allow medicine to help our bodies flourish? And I also love that nutrition conversation that also applies here. Anyway, so I had to, when we talk about hysterectomy specifically, as opposed to something like getting your tubes tied, I also think there's room for having our health as women managed properly. And I am just so grateful that NAPRO technology has done so much to have authentic, beautiful, healthy care for women, so that if there comes a time where a medical hysterectomy may otherwise be necessary, there are ways to allow, or, you know, using birth control may be something from a medical perspective that people are being prescribed, we can actually get to the root of what is authentic health and how do we thrive as women.
Yes, and that people realizing that the truth of the human person, which we need to understand to get on the right path, is not just spiritual and theological and abstract. It's actually very physical and even medical. And people realizing that, yes, the church's wisdom goes even into those realms, which is why all of this, with the men and women, the families who are recognizing these things like NAPRO and becoming aware of how God made the human body, lives are changing for the better. So, Mike, now how have you seen the birth control mindset on yourself in the past and on the men that you counsel? How has it affected them? How did it affect you? And what is the true prescription for change?
Treating others like masturbatory objects, not to be graphic with my language, but in treating others like masturbatory objects, because that's what contraception, the contraceptive mentality breeds, is you looking at other people as things and as just utilitarian means to an end, sexual gratification. You're treating yourself like a cheap sexual object. And so when you finally encounter, and this was much echoes my experience when in meeting my incredible wife, was that I suddenly, because I had treated so many others in such a way and then indirectly treating myself in such a way, I felt like I wasn't worthy of well-ordered love. And in fact, it felt not just alien, but completely, I felt completely unworthy. And it felt almost wrong because I was used to living in such a way. And I see this across so many other men as well, in that it's just led them down the road of destruction, and they keep repeating the same cycle over and over and over again in relationships until, and I think this is the only prescription, obviously getting right with God and being, you know, well-ordered with your sexual appetite, but the only way we get there is ripping yourself away from the addiction to lust, the vice of lust, because at the heart of every single man, no matter how deeply entrenched into the red pill or hookup culture you are as a man, it's embedded in your DNA. Our good Father, our Lord, put it in all of us that we are called to patriarchy, either in the clergy as priests, that's a form of patriarchy being bimodal, or most of us in the home. And so the only way to get to that realization is lifting this veil of sexual sin, because when you're living in such a way in engaging in a reprobate lifestyle, you won't be able to see that. And it wasn't until, and here's a conversation about chastity that I was encountered head on as well. The day after my confirmation, I realized that I stumbled upon some knowledge that my marriage was invalid. Me being a baptized Catholic, my wife not being a baptized Catholic, she's in OCIA now, praise God. And so I had this decision between either continuing to partake in the sacraments, but abstaining momentarily until we got our convalidation, or abstaining from the sacraments and continuing to have sex, but living in a state of perpetual sin. And so I tried to sort of wrestle around this for a long time, and it came to the conclusion that in order to truthfully honor my wife, I had to first honor God, and my responsibility as a man is to really put God first and at the foundation of our relationship, instead of putting myself and my own desires and my gratification at the foundation of it. And that is the only way to well order your sexual appetite is where, and the whole reasoning to this was, not only do I want to love and honor my wife and be set the example for my beautiful daughters, but it's orienting my posture toward eternity. And the way that I show up as a leader and the head of my home and how those graces flow through me into my household was the fundamental antidote to that. And it's the call to responsibility. It's the call to a life of virtue. And this is why this is so destructive, because the enemy knows the gates of hell are going to be filled with men and women that have engaged and indulged in sexual sin. And so there needs to be more of our voices. This is why this is such an important conversation, that point men and women toward God, toward chastity, toward the truths of the church. And what was one of the most beautiful things about coming back to the church was this realization that some of even the sexual acts that some of us are ingrained to thinking that are okay within marriage or within relationships weren't actually at all, because they weren't procreative or unitive. And what a beautiful way you just go even deeper, you know, with your wife or with your husband, and seeing it as this indissoluble union and this sort of miracle of creation that the sexual act is, where it unites your souls and brings forth life, and is sort of like an image of God in the world. It's a beautiful thing. We need to bring the meaning of sex intimacy back to that, and not self-gratification.
Amazingly said, Mike. And that's a perfect segue into my next question to you, Brendan. In the final analysis, it seems that chastity seems to be, or that the state of the culture today seems to be a remarkable underappreciation of the life-giving and life-creating capabilities that God has bestowed upon men and women. And as St. John Paul II famously taught, the family is meant to be a mirror of the inner life of the Blessed Trinity. And yet, in America, almost 13% of women who get abortions are married. So in a post-Roe country that still seems hell-bent on the right to kill children, how do we change hearts?
Great question. I mean, I first love what Mike said at the very end there, that we need a proper understanding of sex and sexuality. You know, that's the truth that God has bestowed on us. And what is it? It's the power to love as God loves. You know, free, full, faithful, fruitful. That's why we call it the marital act, because it reflects marriage vows. But just giving people the truth is not going to change hearts. You know, in a time where we are all wounded, you know, we're all wounded when it comes to our sexuality, where, you know, people have had abortions, you know, we need mercy. And John Paul II, in one of his encyclicals, he says, mercy is the manifestation of love in the midst of evil. It's compassion to suffer with. And so we need to have mercy on ourselves, on everyone. But it's women who have had abortions, they can become heroic saints. You know, so many women will regret this, and there's a deep wound. It's traumatic. And we need to let them know, like, hey, you know, you can become a heroic saint. You know, again, your sin doesn't define you. But I think to really change hearts, we need to listen to people, listen to their struggles. But love and communion is what heals us. And so I think we all need to go on the healing journey. You know, as G.K. Chesterton once said, what's wrong with the world? I am. You know, I am what's wrong with the world. It's not those people who are addicted or those people who are struggling with
that. That's right. Yeah.
I first need to go inward.
That's perfectly said, Brendan, and a perfect way to end this conversation. We're all called to be heroic saints, and we can be by God's grace. So thank you again, Brendan, Elizabeth, and Mike, for being with us today. And thank you for joining us. Don't forget to join us next week with host Father Joseph Mary Wolfe, right here on The Catholic Sphere.